Well, good afternoon to all of you. Welcome back here again. What a delightful day it's been. I am enjoying taking the third slot here today. They said it'd be the hard one because you all would be sleepy, but you haven't been sleeping on me yet, so we're doing okay there. And I get my batteries all charged up with these other brothers sharing, and my heart gets full, and I really, really enjoy that. So it's just a blessing to share this time with you, and I can tell you, you have an incredible opportunity. As I sit here and listen to the things that you're hearing and the challenges that are coming your way this week, the food that you're being presented with on a spiritual level, and I think of my own youth, and I could wish I'd have had some of these opportunities to hear some of the things you're hearing here this week. So God bless you. Embrace them, and may they take effect in your life and give you a get some mileage out of them. I had to think, as I was listening to some of this, of the word Paul uses frequently in the New Testament in his letters to the churches. And it's this word abound. I will that you abound. I pray that you abound, abounding more and more. And I thought about the verses in Colossians, which I think are is very fitting for you. Paul says this: As ye have therefore received Christ the Lord, so walk ye in him. And I'm hoping that by now, at least the majority of you have settled in your heart that you're going to follow God with all your heart. You're locking into faith, and you're making that a platform upon which to apply all the things that you're being taught this week. So as you have received Christ the Lord, so walk ye in him, rooted, roots that go down and bring up nourishment, roots that make you solid so you don't blow over in the winds that come along, rooted and built up in him and established in the faith. This doesn't sound like a typical description of young people, but do you think it could be? Established in the faith as ye have been taught. And then he comes with this word, abounding therein with thanksgiving. And I know that that is God's will for you. He wants you to be those kind of people, even as youth, abounding in him and truly blessed. I was really grateful for everything that both Wilmer and Brother Roger shared this morning. It's really good stuff. But I was glad Roger went where he did with the whole thing about money and work. And I look forward to what he wants to share yet tomorrow. But that's a passionate topic for me too, and one that I feel so deeply about. And I know, as we look at the whole thing of savings and laying up, and maybe Roger will share more tomorrow, but there's certainly nuances and ways that we have to figure out how we're going to apply these things in our personal lives, and is there ever a right time to save, and all of that. But I think that all of those discussions, shall we say, should not be a distraction from the reality that Jesus said these things, and we need to figure out how to apply them in our lives. And I really appreciated the way he laid that out. And I have a deep burden today for young people, because you are growing up not only in times where technology is completely different than it was when I grew up, but so is your ability to make money. You know, I'm only 53 years old, which maybe to you that sounds like a really old man. I'm just a little past halfway, okay? So I wish I was closer to you than the end, but I have to admit I'm moving on. But I still remember my youth very well. But my first job that I took at, what was I, 16? Who wants to guess what my hourly rate might have been? It was minimum wage back then.
$12.50.
Guess again. How much? $4.25 an hour. Some of you guys make that in about 5 minutes. Not quite, but I mean seriously. The things have so changed today. And what I see with young people, and especially you young men, you've got the opportunity to make so much money. And so many of the young men that I see today actually don't have a problem with saving, because they're not saving. And I'm not sure they're giving. They're just spending it. We've got $80,000 pickups. We've got all kinds of stuff. You know, my first car, I didn't have money. I was working for $4.25 an hour. And quite honestly, my dad, he was working for $8. And this is 1986, so we're back a little ways, but not that far. I'm just telling you how far we've come in my lifetime. So your generation, you have a whole new view of life that is completely different than what the realities where I grew up with. So I had to look for a used car. I had to look for something cheap. I think I paid $3,500 for my first car, and it was an older used Honda Accord. And I really thought I had the world by the tail because I was able to even buy a car. And today, we have come so far. Now, why does this burden my heart? Because if you as young people can get a hold of these principles that Brother Roger was laying out for you today, God has use of you in the kingdom. You know, sometime I want to preach a sermon. I'm not going to do it here. But I want to preach a sermon about that donkey that God sent the disciples to go and bring to him when he wanted to make his ride into Jerusalem. And I want the title of that to be, Because the Lord Hath Need of Him. And I see that donkey as representative of you young people. That donkey was unbroken, had no experience. And those of you who have been on horses would know you don't just take a horse that's never been ridden before, and I'm sure a donkey would be even worse, and get on its back and expect good things to happen. It's not the way it works. And I'm sure his disciples were a bit preposterous at, why would you send us to bring this? We'll go get you a good horse. That wasn't what Jesus wanted. He had a point to make. And I believe today every single one of you young people can be like that unbroken horse. But God has need of you. And the question is, will you yield your heart to him? Will you embrace? Will you do the things that he taught? Will you embrace being a follower of Jesus in a practical way? Not some super spiritual way, but in a practical way that works out in your everyday life. God has need of you. And if all of you young men could get a vision, and sisters too, you can earn wages. My daughters are getting 4 times what I got paid when I started working as a young lady. So, you know, you all have the opportunity to earn way more money than what many people before you ever could have. What are you doing with that? Some of you could afford to give half of what you make and not be hurt. And I'd like you to just really think. I'm not going to tread on where Roger wants to go tomorrow, but I'd like you to really think about, when you go buy a pickup, do I need to spend $60,000 or $80,000? Or could I get by with $25,000 maybe? Just think about these things. And here's another thing I'd like to say. And again, hopefully I'm not stepping too much on Roger tomorrow, but he can just build on it, I guess. Work. He talked about work this morning and the virtue of work. Did you know that work can actually be a form of worship? Now wrap your minds around that. Because we so often separate work from the spiritual part of our lives, and we've got the spiritual stuff we do. We have our devotions in the morning, we pray, we sing, then we leave that and we go off to work and we do our worldly stuff all day. Sunday we try to put it all behind and we come to church and we sing and we pray and we preach and we do spiritual stuff, and Monday we go back to work. I'm telling you, that is not the will of God. And I believe some of the most hypocritical Christians that I've met are men in business who live like that. And it burdens me deeply. Here in Lancaster County and Lebanon County, we have a proliferation of Anabaptist businessmen. And it burdens me greatly when I hear people who are unconverted speak in a hurt way about a Christian that they did business with. And they got taken across in a deal. Or they feel like they were somehow not treated fairly. Do you know why it happens? Because we don't see that our businesses and our work and the things we do from Monday to Friday should actually be an extension of the spiritual life that we're coming to sing and pray and preach about on Sunday. Your work can absolutely be a form of worship to God if you will embrace the things Brother Roger was saying. And I got to tell you a story that happened not too long ago, 15 years maybe. It was Hurricane Andrew, I think, down in Florida that wiped out a bunch of houses. And Cam, as they always do, had sent a team down. And I volunteered to go along, took a few people from our company at that time to help clean up and help rebuild houses. And we were one of the very early crews. And it was hastily put together. They wanted a whole crew of men in maybe 2 days. We had to get it together. And it's about a dozen of us. Most of our group was Horning Mennonite boys from this area, Weaverland Conference. How many of you know what that is? All right. Well, they're a fairly conservative Mennonite group in our area. Most of you know, but so I'm sure you'd have similarities in areas where you are. But they certainly weren't exposed to an understanding of pietism. They understood being a Christian, and they understood living by the rules of their church, and they understood good work ethic and all this stuff. I think those boys, from my interaction with them, were probably all had a relationship with Christ that we'd say they were born again. But then we also picked up a couple boys that were from a charity type church, not here in Pennsylvania, but another one that joined our group. And it was terribly interesting to me. I was older and I was really not on their level, but I was along sort of as a chaperone and leader for this group. It was terribly interesting to me to watch the interaction of that group of boys for that 2 weeks that we were together. The two boys from a charity type church, and keep in mind this was 2000 and maybe 4 or 5, somewhere in there, they were deeply infected with the idea that work is not godly. Both of them had jobs, but only part-time jobs. These Horning boys could not wrap their brains around that. What do you do the rest of the time? Well, they just pray and ask God what He would have them to do today. You don't have a plan for the day? Well, God always shows us something to do. Well, what is it? And it was never anything real clear. It was something that, you know, maybe they'd go rake leaves for somebody or something spiritual like that. And these poor Horning boys had no place in their brains to put that. They just could not figure it out. And meantime, these two charity type boys, they had quite a pious suit on the entire week, and they definitely saw themselves, by I could tell by the way they related, as more spiritual than these other boys. I didn't say very much. I just watched it all happen, and I thought it was pretty interesting. And then I think it was maybe 6 days or 7 days in, these boys have been relating some through work, and they came and asked me what I think about this question. And that engendered a really interesting discussion as we talked about work and how its value and what it means. And the sad thing that we saw on the job there, the Horning boys didn't leave with any more respect for those two charity type boys than they had when they came, because those two charity boys did not pull their share of the weight on that trip. They did not throw themselves into the work and work the way the Horning boys did. And it grieved my heart to see and watch. But I realized as I watched that whole thing that, you know what? Somehow in our ideas about what pietism means, somehow in our ideas over the years about what it is to be spiritual, we have misidentified some things that we really need to understand God's heart on. And I truly believe there's a place for you to go and do some work that does not give you any remuneration and is a work of service, but God needs to call you to that. There's many things you could do like that. But for the majority of you, God wants you to get up in the morning and with a willing heart, with a cheerful heart, with purpose in your heart, go to work and seriously give an honest day's wages and give it all you've got. Why? Not because you just love your work, I hope you do, but because you love Him and you've got purpose and intent in your life. And then you take the money that you make from that working, and don't just go waste it on yourself and buy an $80,000 pickup, but think about what Brother Roger told you about giving. Now I want to ask you, with the capabilities we have these days in our economies, what would happen to our charitable missions around the world if every young man, I'm going to say over the age of 16, who claimed to be a Christian, got a vision of that kind of righteousness? How much glory do you think your God would get from that? So I'm in the actions of faith now, but I really felt that God wanted to bring this together right here because it fits so well, and I want you to think about that. Faith is not something mystical that we talk about Sunday, having this, it's very practical. Are you going to be a man or a woman of faith? All right, so today I would like to go through the five essential aspects of faith. We've already talked about the definition of faith on the first day, and then we got into the foundations of faith and finished that up yesterday. And there's much more that could be said on those, but I hope by now most of you have been able to settle in your hearts that there is enough evidence, I'm going to commit my heart to be a follower of God. And I'd love to ask for a response to see how many I have that are in that category, but I don't want to embarrass the ones that might still be struggling. I'm not going to do that. But I would like you to, in the quiet of your own heart, know for certain whether you're answering that question affirmative. Yes, Lord, I believe. Yes, God, I will follow. And at that point, it only becomes a question of what that means to follow and how that works out in your life. That's some of what we want to look at here the rest of our time together this week. So, the five essential aspects of faith. We've already talked about choice a lot, but I have to start there, choice. And when I looked at the definition of this in Webster's, there's five elements of choice. And I was amazed to consider how these come together. The first one is the act of choosing. We've been talking about that. The voluntary act of selecting or separating from two or more things. Something that is preferred, something that you want to do. So you have the ability here to choose and to decide between following your own way, following the wisdom of the world, and as Ken Ham would call it, man's word, the ideas that you can come up with yourself, how I'm going to live my life, or God's way. Now, to follow God's way, you have to be convicted that God truly is who He says He is and has a mandate for you to live. But you have this choice to make, my way or God's way. And there's not a lot of room in between. We have so many of these things we call gray areas, but at the end of the day, you're choosing my way or God's way. It's the act of choosing. Another element of choice is the power of choosing. This comes back to free will that we discussed on the first day. Where there is force, where you have to make a choice under duress, there is no choice. That's not a choice. So choice includes the power to choose, and God gives you that ability today. And you have it, especially as you grow out of childhood into adulthood. You answer to God for yourself. Your parents might have a desire for you. Your preachers might have a desire for you. Others in your life might have a desire for you. The world certainly has a desire for you. But do you know there's only one that can settle that question? And that's you. You're the one who has to choose. You have that power. You hold it in your hand. Nothing else matters. There's also, number three, care in selecting. This goes to a lot of what we talked about yesterday, but this is part of choice. Making a choice involves care in selecting. Now, some of you might not want to exercise that care. Some of you might prefer not to even look at the evidence. It's too confusing for me. I'm just going to let it go. Well, I'm going to say, even in refusing to care, you're still going to end up with a choice. It just may not be as intentional of a choice as what it could be. So choice includes carefully looking at the evidence and exercising judgment and skill in distinguishing that thing that you prefer. And if you're going to develop a conviction in your heart that is going to actually be a living faith to inform the way you live every day, you need to know why you believe it. That's what will allow you to give an answer to every man that will ask of you of the faith that lies in you. So exercise the care. Analyze the things that you're hearing here. Be like Bereans. Search them out. See if they be so. And understand what truth is. And you develop a platform to stand on when you choose that way. Fourthly, you have the thing that is chosen. There's multiple parts here. And so you have a thing you choose. And in this case, it's a way you choose. My way or God's way. You have an element that you're going to choose, and that element is going to drive further things downstream depending on your choice. So you have the thing that you choose. And I'm not making this up. This is all coming from Webster's, okay? It's pretty amazing stuff. And then you have finally, part of choice is that you've decided the best part of anything. And there's lots of illustrations you could give of that. You could have, you know, a handful of desserts that are sitting on the table and you look at them and you make a choice because you like chocolate and not vanilla, and that's my wife. We can never eat the same desserts at the same time with the same amount of enjoyment because she loves chocolate and I love vanilla. So we compromise a lot. Sometimes we go the other way. But choosing something like that involves that you made a decision. This is the best part. I like this vanilla better than all the rest of the stuff. And then the emotional delight I get in eating that vanilla is much greater than what I would get out of eating the coconut one or even the chocolate one, because I like vanilla. Okay? In our spiritual lives here, it's your choosing your way or God's way. And when you have settled in your heart that I'm going to go God's way because I believe who He is, I want the outcome of God's blessing in my life, which we're going to talk about, and I choose this, I think it's the better way. I want God's way. Now it allows you to move on to the next things we're going to look at, commitment and loyalty and purpose in your life, because you've decided this is the best way. So you have those five things. You have the act of choosing, the power of choosing, care in selecting, the thing that is chosen, and finally the best part of anything. And so all of those come into choice. And young people, I just like to say, you must choose. I hope you've all chosen. But if any of you are sitting here still struggling with this choice, I invite you, I beg you, to make a intelligent, intentional choice this week. And I hope it's the right choice. But even if you're going to say, no, I'm not ready to be a follower of God, not ready to be a man or a woman of faith, I'm not willing to give my life and yield it that way, I really like my own way too much, do you know it's better for you to have a clear understanding of what you're doing? And it's better for everyone else around you. It's better for you to admit the truth of that choice than to sit here and just try to live one way but have another thing that you're kind of trying to do. It doesn't work that way at all. You do choose. And I could give you a lot of illustrations of that. One of you young men was talking about going out to see the beach on Monday with a little group of people because they live in the middle of the country and there's no beaches there. And here we're at least within 3 hours of the Atlantic, and so it's kind of tempting. I get that. But let's say that a group of you decide to do that. Well, it's 3 hours out there and you want to leave for home, so you're probably going to talk about it and have it planned ahead of time. We're going to go along, and you're invited to go, and you say, well, I don't know, I can't decide. They're going to get up at 5 in the morning and leave, and it's probably going to be a short night, Sunday night. I just can't decide. And you just don't decide. And you just talk about it, but you won't decide. Well, guess what happens when 5 o'clock comes, and the group that's committed to going gets in their car and leaves, and you still haven't decided? What is your choice? You've chosen to stay, right? You're going to have to run awful fast to catch up. And it's not going to work. You've chosen to stay because you refused to intentionally choose ahead of time. So I'm telling you, in your spiritual life, this is not an option. You must choose. I'm asking you here this week to be intentional about this choice. I'm asking you to analyze the things that are coming your way, the data that you can see, and I'm asking you to choose intentionally and purposefully how you are going to live your life. And let me tell you, if you choose God that way, then all of the things you're hearing from Brother Wilmer, Brother Roger, and some of what I'm sharing with you and will share, all of these things are going to find fertile soil to make you a powerfully effective young man or young woman for God. It is His will. So choose, and choose well. The second element or essential aspect of faith is commitment. Once you have chosen and you have decided, yes, I'm going to follow God. Yes, I'm going to surrender myself to Him. Then the second element is commitment. And you can look at any example of faith in the Bible, and I'd like to get some of them. There's way, way, way too many to study. But you can find these essential elements in every single one of them. They commit. Now, commitment is going to require some things. The definition for commitment is to commit oneself to do some act. There's action that flows out of commitment. To make some declaration that may bind the person. Do you know what that means? I'm going to do this. I'm going to get up at 4:30 on Monday morning and be ready to go at 5. Well, that probably means you've got to set an alarm clock and not hit the snooze button, right? Action. I'm going to make a commitment, and it's going to bind me to do something. That's commitment. And that commitment, that binding, can be an act of honor, an act of good faith or consistency, to pursue a certain course of conduct. And so when we think of this again from a spiritual perspective, very definitely commitment is going to call you to act in certain ways, to live in certain ways, to do certain things, and you're going to commit yourself to follow through. It's very close to loyalty, which is the third one. And these really excite me because I believe every single one of you young people can be a champion of faith. And you know, we so often have the idea that young people have to somehow go through this stage in life that they really can't quite find their way, and they stumble around and they don't have clear direction, and we hope that sometime they gain a faith that helps them to become mature. I'm telling you today, that is nonsense. We look at Brother Wilmer with his gray hair, and we see him as a godly man, a man who's been through the wars of life, a man who's learned a tremendous amount from experience, and a man who can stand here and just in a very beautiful and humble way share with you the things he's learned. So beautiful. But young people, do you know that in terms of faith, every single one of you can have a faith that is just as strong as Brother Wilmer's? And all it takes is for you to make this choice and make this commitment, and then choose loyalty. And loyalty is something I know every one of you young people can understand. You might feel, I'll never be a super spiritual person. I wish I could. But I read these stories about heroes of faith, and I just don't think that I can ever be that kind of a person. Again, I say, nonsense. Just do the things in this order. Make your choice. Make your commitment. And then set your heart to be loyal. And you watch what God does with you. Someday somebody will read the same stories from your life, but it starts here. Loyalty is simply faithfulness, to be faithful to a prince or a superior, true to something you believe, true to duty, true to love, not treacherous. You know what treacherous means? It means two-timing it. It means saying something to one person, but you got something else going on over here. And I will tell you, my heart is tremendously grieved with all of the devastation and killing and suffering that goes on in these wars. But I've been following the Ukraine and Russian conflict since it began, and now the Israel one is blowing that one out of proportion in terms of human suffering in the moment. And I absolutely will not get into the politics of either one. I understand on every side some of what's going on. But the fact of the matter is, if you want to understand loyalty, you don't have to look further than the actions of some of those soldiers. I've watched the Ukrainian soldiers and the things that they will do. Incredibly dangerous, and many of them die. But their rate of death is much lower than Russia's. And you want to know why? The Ukrainians are incredibly loyal to their cause. They believe in what they're doing. And they will go out there and do things that you and I would say, how can a human being do that? The Israeli soldiers right now are going down into these tunnels underneath Palestine. And I try to, underneath the city of Gaza, I try to think what that must be like and the courage that that must take. But I'm telling you, there's loyalty there. It's loyalty to their cause. And they're loyal to an earthly kingdom. They believe in their nation. They believe that their people shouldn't have to suffer, and so they're going to go and face these things. But brothers and sisters, dear young people, you and I are called to loyalty to another cause. What would happen if we would approach this world and all the things that could be done, all the opportunities that are out there, with the kind of loyalty that you see in these men? And let me ask you another thing. What happens to a man who's treacherous in this type of a situation? A man who's saying, yeah, I'll go down in that tunnel, but he's meeting with the Hamas operatives on the other side. How long does he last? Not. And today we have a tremendous amount of treacherous Christians that are just simply trying to two-time it. Because at the end of the day, this is about two kingdoms. And when you choose, when you commit, to become a follower of God and give your heart to pursue these things with commitment and loyalty, you are choosing to leave the other kingdom behind. And it's the kingdom of this world. It's the kingdom where self rules. It's the kingdom where my way and what feels good is the thing we do. You can't have it both ways. But so many people do try and say, well, I really don't want to totally not be a Christian. I think there's probably a heaven and I'd like to be there someday. I'm afraid there's a hell and I don't want to go there someday. But I just absolutely can't believe that these things that my parents want me to do are things I need to do. I can't believe that I have to live this way. I really want to enjoy the things that I see in the world around me. And there's so many illustrations we could give. And they want to have a foot in both camps. It's treachery. And I can tell you it will not work. You've got to decide which kingdom you're in. And then be loyal. So if you really want to understand great faith, I want you to think in terms of great loyalty. That's all it takes. How loyal will you be? How far will you go? The degree that you will be loyal is the degree to which you will have strong faith in your life. God's looking for loyalty. And I hope none of you here are named Loyal, but if you are, you got a great name. Okay? Be loyal. All right, number four, elements of faith. Loyalty that follows commitment, that follows choice, is going to lead to action. You are going to do things. An action, you know what it is, but the definition is literally a driving, something that compels and moves. It's the state of acting or moving. It's the exertion of power or force when one body acts on another. And so you're going to do something when you take action. And we're going to see when we get to some of the illustrations of people who have gone before us and lived this way, all of their lives were compelled to action because of the things that they believed and the loyalties they had in their heart. It's an act or a thing done. And I would like to say that every single thing that you are challenged with in your life can run through this filter of your faith. And you can make a choice. Is it truly quarter? It's 1:05. Okay, I have 25 minutes. That scared me. All right, 25 minutes. We have a little bit of time here. I'm going to go here. I'm going to just say this right now. Because the action of faith, I want to talk tomorrow about action almost completely. But I'd really wish we had the time to go through the story of Joseph. And those of you who are from the fellowship here know why. I preached through the whole Joseph story over the course of this summer. It's so incredibly powerful. But I want to just tell you something. Joseph, when he was in Egypt, he faced some tremendous challenges there that were a test of everything we've said. They were a test of his choice to follow God. They were a test of his commitment, they were a test of his loyalty, and there was absolutely no reason that he should have, humanly speaking, passed the test the way he did. He had come from a messy home situation. And some of you, I'd like you to hear me well on this, because we tend to make excuses for ourselves. You know, maybe you've been abused in some way, some of you even sexually. Girls, I'm so sorry if you find yourself there. But I'm telling you, that is absolutely not a barrier to you being a woman of faith. You can make good choices in spite of those hindrances. Some of you have come from homes that are far from perfect, and maybe mom and dad have conflicts that go on between them. That too is extremely discouraging. You can want to run away from it. I've talked to many young people that say, you know what, that's how Christians are. I don't want to be one. I'd be surprised if some of you sitting here didn't have those thoughts at some point in your life. But I'm telling you, those things don't have to be a hindrance to you being a man or woman of faith. Joseph came from a messy home situation. He was born of the favorite wife of his father. He grew up with a whole bunch of stepbrothers who hated his guts. And they tormented him at every turn. And ultimately, when he landed in Egypt, it was because of what they had done to him in kidnapping him, essentially, after he was sent and was obedient, doing the will of his father. Now, where did Joseph learn to love God? I don't know for sure. He obviously was taught something of a knowledge of God, But I note that he was a shepherd who took care of sheep out in the back 40. And I note the same thing about David. And somehow I think that it was out there that he learned to know God. Maybe he observed nature. I don't know. But somehow Joseph locked into a relationship with God that anchored him. When he came out of the well and landed in Egypt, tough spot to be. No family around. He had just been betrayed by the only people that should have treated him well. He was in a heathen country with a king who didn't know God at all. But Joseph knew God. What's he going to do? Do you know what the common thing that is said about Joseph the entire way through that story? And I love this. The Lord was with Joseph. So he landed in Egypt, and the Lord was with Joseph. And it says that God made Pharaoh's house to prosper because of Joseph. One Christian in the midst of heathenism came from a broken family. Then he was thrown into jail because his boss's wife lied about him. And boys, I'd like you to think for just a moment, if you struggle with content on your phone or other places, think about what Joseph faced that day. He had no reason not to give in to that. None. Except one. Do any of you remember what he said? Maybe.
The first word.
How can I
sin against the Lord?
But yeah. You're very close.
I don't know.
You're dead close. You got the right idea, and that's what I wanted. Joseph's words when he faced that ultimate temptation were, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And there it is. It's the action of faith, young people. And he came from as broken and messy and ugly of a home situation as you could have. He had had the most abusive journey through his life as anybody could have. And here he was facing something that was incredibly unfair. If anybody had the opportunity to go yell at God for a while and say, God, you're just not fair. I do not understand. I've served you. You've allowed me to land here. I obeyed you. And now I'm sitting here in prison. Why, God? That's not what you read. After he landed in prison, the next words were, and the Lord was with Joseph and made what he did to prosper even in prison. He went to serving the prisoners there. That story is so utterly compelling of faith. But if you want an example of action in spite of everything going wrong in life, Joseph is it. And I'm telling you, if you develop that type of a value system in your own heart, there is nothing you can't overcome. There is nothing you cannot overcome. The temptations that come to you through your technology or anywhere else, they have no chance against that kind of a commitment to your God. But it's going to flow out of choice, commitment, and loyalty. And once you have those things settled, you have a platform for action that can move you forward. Anybody ready to go? You can do this. And then, the fifth element, and this is so beautiful, is the rewards of faith. Once you have chosen, and you've committed, and you've followed through on loyalty, and your life is lived out of the actions that flow from that, you will reap the rewards. What do the rewards mean? Well, it's the recompense, or the equivalent return. For good that is done, for kindness, for services, and the like. Rewards can consist of money. They can consist of goods or any return of kindness or happiness. The laborer is worthy of his reward. Great is your reward in heaven, as Brother Roger was saying. You lay up treasures in heaven. Rewards and punishments presuppose moral agency and something that's voluntarily done, well or ill, without which respect, though we may receive good, is only a benefit and not a reward. So there's a difference between a benefit and a reward, they're saying. But when you choose to do something out of a moral desire to do well, there's a reward that will come as a recompense of that. It's the fruit of men's labors or works. And I want to tell you something. This is really one of the most simple realities of life that there is. You can go back into Deuteronomy, and I should have had the verses, but God actually says it multiple times there through Moses, that if you obey me, I will bless you. If you disobey the things that I've said, you will receive a curse in your life. And he lays out what those blessings will be, and he lays out what those curses will be. And it's simply black and white. Choose you this day. Do you want a blessing or do you want a curse? Obey me and you'll find blessing. Disobey me and you'll find cursing. Do you know why? Because there's only one person that wrote the rules for how life works. It's not me. It's not your parents. It's not your church leaders. It's your God. He wrote the rules. And because he wrote the rules, many of which are given to us in the Old Testament, as we understand how God wants to his people to interact and how he wants us to even relate to him. And his heart has always been to have a relationship with his people. Through the New Testament, he gives us the means to have that relationship in a very personal way. But you have got to decide if you're going to follow his rules. And if you do, you get the rewards of that. If you don't, you miss the rewards. Now, this is the exact same thing that Paul says in Romans, that the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life. And you know, when I see a young person saying, I don't have to do this, I'm going to go my own way, I'm very sure God doesn't care. And I see them choosing things that feel good to their flesh. I totally know what the end of that's going to be. I have lived long enough to watch it. It's just as predictable as anything you would want to have in life. The wages of sin is death, and it's because of this simple principle. You will receive the reward of your choice. And a refusal to choose is still a choice. And whatever you choose is what the reward is going to follow. So if you choose to live for your flesh and do things your way instead of God's way, you'll get a reward, but it's a reward of death. And all these people who think that, you know, I can live for my flesh. I can be a free moral agent. It doesn't matter if I fornicate. It doesn't matter what music I listen to. It doesn't matter. It's so much nonsense. The deeper you go in all of that fleshly stuff, the deeper the reward of your self-serving is going to be. And ultimately it ends in the grave. One of the deepest griefs of my life. I have time for this story. One of the deepest griefs of my life was when I had to preach the funeral at a young man who was a dear friend of mine who chose this way. And he was in conflict with his father. And his father, he's a good friend of mine now. His father made a lot of mistakes. I don't think his father would mind me saying that. He knows it. And there wasn't a strong relationship there between dad and son. But his dad wanted to see him go the right way and do some things right. And his dad was telling him, you got to do this. And he focused in on the austerity of his dad, and his dad, some anger issues sometimes, and the way he said things and whatever. He focused in on that and he rejected that. And so he was just determined, I'm going to do my own thing. And he regularly, just because of acting out the frustration and anger that in his heart, on his way home from work, there was a road he drove on about 7 or 8 miles. That was 45 mile an hour speed limits. And he'd regularly top 90 mile an hour on that road just to prove I don't have to listen to anybody. Well, one night he got in trouble on that. It's amazing he didn't lose his license. But he never, and then he'd be sorry he got caught, but he'd never ever truly repent of following his own way. And it really grieved me that it was this conflict with his dad that was the thing. Well, then a girl came into the picture, and there was a few other things in between. And this girl was not a Christian. She was a nice girl, but not a Christian. And he liked this girl. I don't even know where he met her, but it certainly wasn't in the church. He liked this girl, and he wanted her. Well, of course, dad said, no, son, not okay with that. Well, he's going to make this work. And dad said, it's not going to work. Well, I'm going to make it work. And they were both rebels. He was a rebel, but she wasn't even professing to be a Christian, at least not in any significant way. I don't know if there was any Christianity in her background, but she certainly wasn't a pious person, I'll put it that way. And so they came together, had this relationship, and it went along for a while, but the wages of sin is death. And it wasn't long till the things that they were engaging in and doing led to a downward spiral, and it wasn't getting any better in their lives. And finally, this girlfriend said, you know what? I'm done with this. You're a mess. I don't want to be with you anymore. And when that happened, it was altogether the consequences of the choices that he'd been making. But it was too much. It was too much for him to go back and say, Dad, I've been wrong. That was too much. And I wish so bad that Dad could have come and there somehow could have been a healing of that breach. But it was too much. So now he'd lost the only thing in his life that he really loved, this girl, and he had nothing. We should have seen the signs. I wasn't close enough to him at that point in everyday life to know. But after he did what he did, his girlfriend said, yeah, I should have seen this, I should have seen this, I should have seen this. We actually have in our house today the piano that he owned. He loved music, and he had bought a really pretty expensive piano that he had learned to play. And about 3 months before he died, he had called me and said, look, I don't need this piano anymore. Would you like to buy it? Well, we love music. So I said, absolutely, I'll buy it. And I paid him a good price for it. So he got most of his money back. Well, that was part of his preparation for what he was planning to do. And had no idea. And so one day he flew airplane too. He was a pilot. And down in Fredericksburg, Virginia. And he got in his plane one day. And he took off, and he had left a note for his girlfriend at home, and they were living together at that point. He left a note for his girlfriend that it's over, I'm done. And she was on her way out anyway, but they were still together. And he got in his airplane, and he took off. She got the note shortly before he took off from that runway. And she called the police immediately, because she knew what it meant. And she got there the same time the officers did. And they got there just in time to watch him lift off. And he was alone in the airplane. He took off. He circled around once, slow, and he waved at her. And then he put the plane into as steep of a climb as he could and went up 2,000 feet and put it in a dive. And there was not a viewable body. And I got asked to preach that sermon. How do you do that? It was the hardest sermon I ever preached. But I'm telling you, young people, the wages of sin is death. And there's no way around it. You know, I can't make your choices for you. Many times I've wished I could. But it's not in my power to do. It's not in Roger's power or Wilmer's power or the principals that are here or your parents. It's only in your power. You're the only one that can make that choice. But whatever you choose, the reward, your recompense will come to you. And so I have to ask you today, what will it be? What will you choose? But Scripture doesn't say these things in vain to us. It's here for us to consider and think about. So wherever your life is, I just want you to take stock of it and decide how you're going to approach these things. Will you choose? Will you commit? Will you be loyal? Will you let the actions of your life flow out of that platform? And then I tell you, you will receive the rewards. The rewards is the only part of that whole equation that you really can't control. There's a lot of really good rewards that are going to come your way if you choose to believe and you choose to follow God's path. And obviously there's a lot of negative things that are going to happen. It's not if, it's a matter of when and how much. That are going to happen in your life if you take your own way. That's the only part you cannot control. It's going to happen. But you have the choice in the first four things. Choice, commitment, loyalty, and then action. So God is calling you to those things. Faith that works. Let's turn to Hebrews 11 for just a few thoughts here in the remaining time that we have today. We had started in a few verses here on Monday, I think it was. But you will notice in verse 4, it says, by faith, Abel offered unto God. And I think it's Brother Wilmer that talked about Cain, and he, I think, has a much deeper knowledge of that whole situation with Cain and Abel than what I do. He studied it, obviously. But by faith, Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. Why was it? We don't have a distinct record that God told the boys ahead of time what offering he would prefer. But I guess I think it's likely that he did. I think it's likely that they both knew what God wanted, and Abel chose to obey, and Cain didn't. I don't know. If I'm not right, Wilmer, you can straighten me out. But there was something that Abel chose, and certainly after God received the offering, it says that God, he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and by it he being dead yet speaketh. If you go back to the story in Genesis, it says that God received Abel's offering and he had respect to it, and to Cain's offering he did not. And then Cain got mad. God, it's not fair. I don't know what all he said, but he sure wasn't happy with God's decision and choice. Faith and perspective has a difference in the outcome. Enoch was translated that he would not see death, and he was not found because God had translated him before his test translation. He had this testimony that he pleased God. And as far as I know, he's the only person who ever lived who didn't find, who didn't die, who didn't find the grave. God took him up without dying. And I don't know very much about Enoch other than that. But clearly he's here, and it says he had this testimony that he pleased God. So Enoch had a relationship with God. My point is there's action in every one of these. Because, verse 6, without faith, it's impossible to please him. He that comes to God must believe that he is, and that he's a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. And then it goes down through this whole list. Noah, Abraham, Brother Wilmer talked about him this morning. And there's a lot about Abraham. He mentioned about Mount Moriah and the whole experience there with Isaac. But there's also the fact that he answered God's call to go when he had no idea where he was going. Abraham believed God, and he was faithful in following him. And then it says in verse 13 that all of these people died in faith, not having fully received the promises, but they saw them afar off. But they were persuaded of them, choosing commitment, loyalty. They were persuaded of them. And they embraced them. And because of these things that they believed and saw afar off, they confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. Are you a stranger and a pilgrim? This world is not my home. You with me? For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they, these people, speaking of Abraham, Sarah, Enoch, Noah, all these ones that is mentioned heretofore, truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country. Which way are you looking? If you don't commit, if you don't have loyalty in your heart, you're going to find yourself looking back to the world. And it's still possible for that world to draw you back. If they had looked back, they could have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, a heavenly country. Wherefore, because of this, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get back here yet tomorrow. I would love to look more at all of these, especially Moses' example. It mentions Abraham here, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph. We already talked about Moses. Moses was an exceptional one because Moses had all the opportunities that the world could offer. Moses was born at a time there where he was found by the princess, remember, along the river and taken to grow up in Pharaoh's house. He was a son of privilege. And yet it says that Moses refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter and chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Why? Because he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. He looked at what the outcome was. The story of Moses there is pretty amazing and what all he went through. But you know the one I like, or I should say amazes me the very most in this chapter, is verse 31. By faith, the harlot Rahab, by faith the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believed not when she had received the spies with peace. Now, how many of you would ever choose or believe that a harlot, someone who has lived a promiscuous and immoral life, could possibly be someone that would make it into the Heroes of Faith chapter of the New Testament. It's good we're not God, isn't it? I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have inspired that, because that's not the way our brains work. But Rahab chose something different than everybody else in that city. And I'm pretty sure she was not a harlot from that day on. I don't think she was a harlot when those men were there. She had been, but she chose something different. The reason I like that is because it doesn't matter who you have been. It does not matter who you have been. It only matters who you will be. And that's the question today. And I'd like to leave that with you. Young people, you're young. Life is in front of you. God calls you. The world calls you. Who will you be? And with that, I'll turn it back to the staff here. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you for listening to this message. We trust that it has been a blessing to you. If you would like additional sermons or a catalog, please visit our website at effortofministries.org. Call us toll-free at 855-557-7902 or write to us at Ephrata Ministries, 400 West Main Street, Suite 1, Ephrata, Pennsylvania, 17522. You are welcome to copy this message for free distribution. This ministry is supported by your donations. May the Lord Jesus bless you.